From Euros Worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. It is Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019. This is the Richie Allen Show, of course, about to begin. Live in Salford in Greater Manchester. It's been another pleasant, if not a little cold, afternoon today. I've got two very interesting guests for you today on two different subjects. Multiple subjects, really. Tweet the programme right now. Looking forward to your comments as usual. Good to be with you this Tuesday evening. Or is it afternoon? It's kind of afternoon, isn't it? Yeah, it is.
Well, ring out the gimp.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, David Vance is the editor of biasthebbc.org. He's a political and social commentator. You can see him on Sky News, on Russia Today, regular appearances there. And he's also heavily involved in altnewsmedia.net. David's been on the programme plenty of times before. We're going to talk about the latest Brexit shenanigans, but we're also going to talk about how PayPal is targeting the independent media for demonetization. And lots more, maybe. David Vance joins me a little bit later this hour. And there was an extraordinary article in the Metro newspaper today. It was on the Metro website yesterday, in the paper today. 12-year-old and 13-year-old children are being told by councils in the UK about some very, very, very adult sexual practices. I'm not going to describe them now, not in the introduction anyway, but I'm going to get into it in the second hour with a vlogger and a citizen journalist who's been on the programme. She was on with me back earlier in the year, Cassie Crowhurst, who's a wellness coach as well. She's got a healthy audience on Facebook. She talks about these issues on there. And we'll talk about child safety, the safety of children in school and in general around these issues with Cassie in the second hour on Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. Yeah. Get in. I said get in. Get in there. Get in there. Right. And I'm developing a bit of a sore throat, which is a pain in the arse. Everybody else has it. Or has had it, and I thought it was going to skip me. But I could hear it in myself this morning when I was putting the YouTube live stream onto podcast. A little bit of a sore throat coming on me. But it's not going to get me down. No, it ain't. No, it ain't. Right. Now, Brexit business. Let's do it quickly. Do it. Do it to me. Do it to me. Harder. Harder. Brexit. The government is going to abandon its Brexit bill this evening. But only if members of Parliament vote down its three-day timetable to get their Brexit bill through Parliament. That's very interesting. Boris Johnson told MPs this afternoon if MPs voted against his programme to debate and read and debate his withdrawal bill, that he would basically pull it and push for a general election. Okay? The Prime Minister said Parliament had been caught in a deadlock of its own making and that he wouldn't allow this to carry on for months more. No more of this for the coming months, he said. If you vote against my schedule, my three-day timetable to get this through Parliament, if you basically stop me, I'm going to just kick the bill into touch and go for a general election. Now, the European Union has made noises this afternoon that it would assist Boris Johnson because to facilitate a general election, they would indeed grant such an extension. Here's Boris Johnson speaking to Parliament this afternoon.
If Parliament refuses to allow Brexit to happen and instead gets its way and decides to delay everything until January or possibly longer, in those circumstances, can the government continue with this? And with great regret, I must go directly to the point that the Honourable Gentleman raises. With great regret, I must say that the bill will have to be pulled, and we will have to go forward, much as the Right Honourable Gentleman may not like it, we will have to go forward to a general election. And I will argue I will argue. I will argue at that election. I will argue, no, Mr. Speaker. I will argue at that election. Let's get Brexit done. And the Leader of the Opposition will make his case to spend 2020 having two referendums, one on Brexit and one on Scotland. And the people, Mr. Speaker, will decide. Mr. Speaker, there is another path. And that is to accept, no, I won't. And that is to accept, as I have done, that this deal does not give us everything that we want. And all of us can find clauses and provisions to which we can object as we can in any compromise. But it also gives us the opportunity to conclude that there is no dishonour in setting aside an entirely legitimate desire to deliver the perfect deal in the interest of seizing the great deal that is now within our grasp, of seizing the opportunity to begin healing those divisions, to satisfy the aching desire of the British public, that we would just get Brexit done and to move on to do what those who sent us here want us to do, and that is to address their priorities.
Yeah. And just to be clear, they're going to vote at about 7 o'clock this evening, maybe a little bit later, on these on the proposed timetable. You heard Johnson there. If they reject the timetable, we will give up on the bill and we will go for an election. As I said, the European Union would be delighted to grant an extension to facilitate the election. All right? All right. The US President Donald Trump has called the congressional impeachment investigation, as that looks to or seeks to remove him from office. Well, he's called it a lynching, has Donald. He's called it a lynching. In a tweet, Trump condemned the inquiry as without due process or fairness or indeed any legal rights. Democrats might seek to impeach him by Christmas. They might seek to. They may seek to. Don't think they'll have the numbers in the Senate, but anyway. So there's murders over this term lynching, which has been described as racially loaded in the United States. Lynching, of course, referring to extrajudicial executions by white mobs, mainly against black Americans. So you can't use the term lynching anymore in any context, at least not in America. Trump tweeted, so someday if a Democrat becomes president and the Republicans win the House, even by a tiny margin, they can impeach the president without due process or fairness or any legal rights. All Republicans must remember what they are witnessing here. A lynching, but we will win. And of course, when he said lynching, well, you could hear the progressive scream. Oh, it's horrible, isn't it? Oh, Jesus. Turn it off, Richie. You could hear the progressive screams all over the place. Congressman Jim Clyburn told CNN, that is one word that no president ought to apply to himself. I've studied presidential history quite a bit, and I don't know if we've ever seen anything quite like this. He's a South Carolina Democrat and said he's a product of the South and knows the history of the word lynching. Bobby Rush, from Illinois, tweeted to Trump, what the hell is wrong with you, man? You can't say lynching, apparently, so there's murders. They've been asking the Donald to delete the tweet. It hasn't been deleted. Maybe Twitter will get involved. It's all a bit mad. A lot of coverage as well about a row that's been brewing for a few days between the US Democratic presidential candidate, Tulsi Gabbard. Hawaii, right? Yeah. And Hitlery Clinton, so dubbed by the great Gerald Celente, Hitlery Clinton. Hitlery, of course, is a murderess, con woman, gun and drug runner, trafficker of children and a disaster capitalist. But she's been calling Tulsi Gabbard the favourite of the Russians and a Russian asset. Very funny this, very theatrical, it's all very deliberate. Donald Trump has weighed in on this as well, saying that Gabbard is no Russian asset. Nor is anybody else. Gabbard called Clinton the queen of warmongers, the embodiment of corruption, and a personification of the rot that has sickened the Democratic Party. All very interesting. Number of US political pundits are, well, they're, what are they saying? They're predicting that Clinton might enter the presidential race very late in the day. I wouldn't be so sure about that, but then again, what do I know? 13 minutes it is past the hour. Did you watch Dispatches on Channel 4 last night about Prince Andrew and about Jeffrey Epstein? I didn't. I'll tell you why I didn't. Yesterday was such an absolutely incredibly mad day for me with things to do that when I got off air last night and I got the programme on YouTube, I completely forgot about Channel 4 and Jeffrey Epstein. So I kind of sped watched bits of it today, and it didn't tell us anything that we didn't know or that wasn't in the public domain, but the aftermath of it has been very, very interesting. The aftermath. So Newsweek is reporting on this today. Newsweek, yes. And one or two US publications, but very little coverage of the Channel 4 Dispatches programme anywhere else in UK media today. And that's kind of startling, really. So this documentary, Channel 4 Dispatches, was examining the relationship between the Grand Old Duke of York and Jeffrey Epstein, the billionaire financier. We know that Epstein was found dead, of course, back in August in a New York jail cell while he was waiting trial on more offences of child sex trafficking. Very strange death. Very strange that he could do that, but anyway. So, some of the revelations that came out last night, most of them we've heard before, that the financier Epstein had a total of 13 different phone numbers for Prince Andrew in his book of high-profile contacts. And the pair are supposed to have taken part in an orgy with at least 9 other young women while on Epstein's private Caribbean island. These allegations were made by Virginia Roberts Jeffrey, who claims she was trafficked, of course, by Epstein and had sex with some of his very rich and very powerful friends, including Prince Andrew. She says the orgy was the third time she had sex with Andrew, the first time in 2001 when she was 17. These are her claims. He denies them. But what's very interesting is no mention after the programme aired on Channel 4, I mean, it is very newsworthy. A British television channel, a national channel, is running a documentary suggesting that Prince Andrew has a lot to answer to. And yet, Newsnight on BBC Two later on, Sky News, not a whisper about Dispatches. How very interesting. But what is very interesting is a guy called Di Davies. Now, Di, that's D-A-I, it's a Welsh name. Di Davies, he told Dispatches that, well, he's bloody well mystified that Andrew wasn't even the subject of a preliminary investigation over these links to Epstein's trafficking ring. Mystified as to why Andrew wasn't the subject of even a preliminary investigation. Why not? He said they should question anybody who has the appropriate knowledge and direction in respect of this matter. Indeed! And it makes me think, why didn't the police interview Prince Charles about his friendship with his bestie Jimmy Savile? And this isn't conjecture now, on my behalf, or supposition. Charles has stated on numerous occasions that Jimmy Savile was his closest friend. Right? You would have thought a person of interest. Hey, Charles, listen, nobody's accusing you of anything. We've got to get you to come down and come on the record because you knew this guy very well. But Davies, Di Davies, this former head of London's Metropolitan Police Royalty and Specialist Protection, right? So he was head of a police unit that protects the royals. I'd love to interview him. He said that without a doubt, police would be very nervous about looking into Prince Andrew and his links to a convicted paedophile. And he said on the record, you don't take on the royal family lightly, but what I'm trying to say is irrespective of who you are, what you are, you should answer to the law. Dispatches, Prince Andrew. We haven't even begun to scratch the surface of it. You and I both know this. But then again, programmes like this one, and this one specifically, we've been banging on about this in the royal family for many, many, many years now. This is in Manchester. This is happening in Manchester, but it's very relevant to you and me and everybody else. The government has announced there will be a public inquiry to investigate the deaths of the victims of the Manchester Arena attack, which happened in May of 2017. It'll be chaired by Sir John Saunders, a retired High Court judge. He led the investigation and inquest into the 22 deaths. What's really annoying the families of those who were killed in the bombing is that the intelligence agencies will give their evidence in private, and it will never be made available. What they say will never be made available to the families of those who died in the arena, meaning they'll never know the full details of why MI5 failed to stop the attack. Hashim Abedi, the brother of the man believed to have blown himself up at the arena, Salman Abedi, he's in the country, and he's going to stand trial as kind of like a co-conspirator to the attack. He vehemently denies having anything to do with it. We're going to watch this one fairly closely. And Julian Assange, Tony Gosling mentioned Julian Assange on last night's programme. Of course, the WikiLeaks guy. Shouldn't refer to him as just a WikiLeaks guy, but the man behind the publication, Julian Assange, of hugely important documents, particularly relating to the Iraq War, of course, and Guantanamo Bay. And you know that he's in Belmarsh prison, and you know that the United States wants to extradite him, and you know that Assange appeared in court yesterday afternoon. And Tony Gosling, who's an excellent journalist, and who was on this programme last night, was lamenting, quite rightly, the lack of any outrage in the UK press today, yesterday even, and I can double down on that, today, nothing in the UK press from journalists about what's happening to Julian Assange, who doesn't appear to be very well, and didn't appear to be well in court yesterday. Here's Irish MEP Claire Daly. She's an interesting woman, and she was on this programme a couple of years ago on other issues. Claire Daly talking about the plight of Julian Assange.
I think it's quite obvious that the United States have been preparing for years for this, and it's his legal team who have sought a time extension. They've sought that on the basis of trying to get more evidence for what is believed to have been sort of surveillance action on him and his legal team at the time he was in the embassy in Ecuador and other circumstances. But I mean, I think from our point of view, this is the sort of defining press freedom issue of our generation, and for a British court to deny a legal team a modest extension when the US have had so long to plan for this, I think it's obviously disappointing for campaigners, but it's a bit of an outrage actually against British justice, because this case needs to be heard in the open and to take its time.
How do you see the wider consequences affecting society?
Yeah, and I think that is the key thing. I mean, one man's life clearly is at stake, but more than that, this is a key freedom of the press issue, because for the first time, somebody would be indicted for the crime of really pure publication. Because we have to remember, Julian Assange was an award-winning journalist and publisher. He was the one who broke the news about US war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan, and clearly now he is being punished for that.
Yeah, clearly he is being punished for it. Claire Daly, Irish MEP, speaking to RT there. Now, David Vance has just left me know he's got a wee connectivity, is that how you say it? Connectivity issue, but he'll be with me in a few minutes' time. Thanks for letting me know anyway. It's nice to be kind of copied in on this stuff. I've had guests before that have had problems, and God love them, they've panicked and tried to fix the problems and forgotten to tell me. Like, where the hell are you? Oh, I had problems. All you had to do was tell me, dear. That's all you had to do, dear. Because I could have filled, dear. You know? I fill very well. I want to read you a bit of an email. Two emails, in fact, while we're there. It's lovely to have stuff. Lovely to have stuff coming in from your listeners. Very interesting stuff. Very interesting stuff, indeed. I had a lovely email last night from a lady who's based in Canada, in Toronto. And she drops me emails from time to time. She is a solicitor, a lawyer, and she's lovely. Criminal law, basically. Her name is Alice Fava. And Alice sent me this email yesterday, last night. It's very good. She says, "Hi, Richie. Ha ha," she says, "that singer who was told to take her top off, it hit a bit of a nerve for me. It made me laugh, really. I covered a story yesterday about a singer. Why can't I remember her name now? Her name is Maggie, and she's a singer, and she took to Twitter saying that she melted down and she was confused and upset because a man shouted out to her, "Take your top off," at her gig. Take your top off, right? And then another guy said, "You're mighty fine," or "You're a real honey," or something like that. And of course, she went onto Twitter looking for sympathy. And it was made into a news story, and everybody covered it. And I took the right royal piss out of it on the programme yesterday, which, like the big baldy gammon that I am, I'm prone to do. But anyway, Alice is a criminal lawyer, and she was very interested in the story. She said, "Richie, when I was just starting out as a criminal lawyer in the 80s, we had to go into the cells at the courthouse to interview prisoners. The accused would yell out, 'Take your top off,' and rude things like that. If it wasn't bad enough, there were urinals in the cells, and the prisoners took great delight in using the facilities while I or other female counsel were interviewing our clients in plain view, of course." So there was Alice trying to interview her client through the bars, and just to be awkward, some guy would go and use the loo while other guys were shouting out, "Take your top off." "At first," says Alice, "I was humiliated. But then I took the approach that they're in prison and the guards are doofus heads and I get to go home and make way more money as a first-year lawyer than they could ever dream of." Akin to your argument about the Bulgarian racist heckling of handsome, talented, wealthy, sexy and very rich footballers, says Alice. "I never complained because I thought that would make me look like a baby. Also, I was so scared that I might be criticised on the merits for not doing a good job that being heckled about my body parts was preferable. That does not happen anymore, of course. I'm 100 years old now," she says. "But we don't interview prisoners in cells and they don't dare heckle because they are likely to get walloped by a cellmate or the female lawyer's client. It just doesn't happen anymore. And that's because there are now female guards and smarter, braver women than me paved the way for the rest of us. When I was in law school, my classmates actually told me that I was taking the place of a man. Oh my God. So I retorted by saying that what if someone said to him that he, who happened to be Jewish, was taking the place of a Christian? He had no response, but I could tell that he did not agree with me. Times have certainly changed, and they still need to change way more." And Alice goes on to say, "But oh my God, the singer in your story, the female singer, has all the power. Can't she laugh or insult him? She better think of some good comebacks for when it happens again so that she turns the tables. Like a small dick joke or just develop a thick skin already." And that's Alice, a criminal lawyer in Toronto. Thanks, Alice. Absolutely right. What's happening to women? This goes back and this speaks to this notion that people need to be protected. You know, I don't blame the singer as much as I blame the media and politicians for creating a new paradigm where they get to be the protectors of all manner of people that they deem to be vulnerable. Okay? So it's identifying vulnerable people and groups and saying, "You can't do this. You can't say this. We won't allow it." And then they say to the vulnerable group, "Don't worry about it. We'll protect you. You don't have to listen to this. You don't have to read this. You don't have to watch this. You don't have to be party to this." And she's quite right, is Alice, of course. Get your top off, love. How could that confuse you or hurt you or ruin your experience of the gig? Jesus, could you imagine Susie Quattro? Can you imagine Chrissy Hind? Can you imagine Carole King? Over the years, the things that have been shouted out to them by drunk men at concerts. Oh, Christ. Tina Turner. Imagine Tina Turner, what she would say. It's a dangerous thing. We have to watch it very closely. We can laugh at snowflake women who say, "I was very confused and my gigs should be safe spaces." Well, to make them safe spaces, love, just allow women in, you know, of a certain political persuasion. ban all alcohol from the venue, just basically make it a completely sanitised shit show of a night out. Or grow a pair of balls or breasts and give as good as you get. It's as simple as that. Oh, it's what an interesting email today from Dean Smith. How you doing, Dean? And Dean is a long-time listener to the Richie Allen Show, and he tried his hand at phoning in talk radio in the UK this morning. And he phoned in the Toby Foster Show, because it's been on national and commercial radio today. It's been all over the place, this thing about giving up cars. You see, there's been a proposal that in the near future, electric car owners will be rewarded with a green registration plate, or as you Americans say in America land, you say you say license plate, don't you? So it's been proposed that if you got an electric car, that you'll get a green plate and you'll be able to park for free wherever you want, because you're a good guy or a good gal, and you'll be able to drive in bus lanes, right, if you want, and all of that old jazz, so that they can get diesel cars and petrol cars off the road. Proper nonsense this, but again, very dangerous. But Dean rang up anyway. He got on the air, did Dean. Good man, Dean. I didn't see the email until late in the day. I would have tried to find the audio. And he called in, explained the whole thing, mentioned Piers Corbyn, his great work, and he also mentioned George Soros and his relationship with Extinction Rebellion. And he did get a few minutes, did Dean, to make the argument. But he talked about Agenda 21 and Agenda 30 and the real documentation that shows these agendas exist and they are localised. And before he knew it, he was cut off. And, says Dean, even if I had tried to find the audio myself, that's me here, Richie Allen, that I wouldn't have been able to find it. Because this is a BBC show, by the way, the Toby Foster Show. When the show went on to podcast and went on to iPlayer, just shortly afterwards, the entire show was there except Dean's call. Amazing! They put the programme on the internet after it had finished, but they omitted the phone call made by Dean. God forbid anybody hear about... God forbid anybody hear about Agenda 21, Agenda 30. Isn't that crazy? Right, I think my friend David Vance is ready. I've never met David. I call him a friend because he's a lovely guy to have on the programme. So around about 7 o'clock then, this evening, the MPs at Westminster will vote on whether to allow the government, that's Boris Johnson's government, proceed with this, what they've been calling this 3-day programme to basically get the Brexit bill, the withdrawal bill, through Parliament. Okay, so they'll vote on this about 7 o'clock. If they vote it down, well, it means that Boris Johnson is scuppered. So what he said today is, he has said clearly, if that happens, I will pull the bill entirely. I will go for the extension with the European Union, and we will have a pre-Christmas general election to sort this out once and for all. Let me welcome back to the programme the editor of biasedbbc.org. He is a political and social commentator. You'll often see him on Sky News and RT News as well. And he is prominent and very involved in the website altnewsmedia.net. That's altnewsmedia.net. Let's welcome back to the programme our old friend David Vance. David, welcome back. How are you doing?
Hiya, Richie. I'm doing very well, thank you. Nice to get talking to you again.
It is. It's been ages. Thanks for coming back on. Is this the best possible outcome for Boris Johnson if the House votes down his 3-day programme to get the bill through? Because the European Union has said today, as we would expect, yes, we will give, or we would be happy for an extension if it facilitated a general election. Is Johnson setting a clever trap here, or is it not so clever? Is it the obvious move by Johnson? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, those are really interesting questions, aren't they? You know, in some ways, it probably is the best result for Johnson, because his atrocious deal will not do him or his party any good, even if it does get through the House later on. So I suppose if you're looking at it strategically, he can get it voted. If this fails, he can play the martyr. He can go to the country if Parliament lets him, Richie, but that's by no means certain. And on that basis, try to present himself as the champion of Brexit, even though, of course, to any rational observer, what he's done with Brexit turns him into essentially, to my mind, he's Theresa May with a worse hairstyle.
You're right, the withdrawal agreement, and of course they published the text of it last night. It is wretched, and it's very difficult to understand how people like Jacob Rees-Mogg and some of the other European Research Group members, how they can keep a straight face in saying they would support it when it breaches some of their own red lines, you know, particularly with obviously respect to Northern Ireland, which we're going to talk about now. Why is it so woeful? I mean, they did say, didn't they, that they wouldn't ever countenance any border or any customs checks in Northern Ireland. This was an absolute red line for the so-called Tory Brexiteers, but it seems that they're prepared to accept that now, David. Explain that to our listeners, will you?
Well, I believe that what we've seen is that these so-called Spartans in the ERG, you know, the last redoubt of Brexiteers, they're all straw men. Ultimately, they've fallen in behind the party because they think this is the best thing for the party, not the country, the party. So that's the first thing to be said about the Jacob Rees-Moggs, the Steve Bakers, et al., Marc Francois. You know, one moment they were saying it's impossible that there could be any border up the Irish Sea. And now I think we had Steve Baker on this morning saying he's had to swallow ever so hard. Well, as far as I can see, the border's up the not up the middle of High Wycombe, his constituency. It's up the middle of the Irish Sea. So it's an atrocious betrayal of the people of Northern Ireland. You know, if you want to look at it, and we can talk about that level. But it's so much worse than that, Richie. It's, you know, there's so many fronts. This is, I've heard Nigel Farage describe this as a slightly better deal than Theresa May. I argue it's a worse deal than Theresa May. And I don't think I'm the only one that thinks that, but I'm not a Conservative.
No, it is. I've looked through it. I got some notes from it. I know a lot of old MEPs. And before this was published, I got to see little bits and pieces of it, you know, with the caveat not to talk about it and stuff. It is, of course, it's not. It doesn't lead to any sort of real Brexit. It leaves the country, you know, subject to EU regulation on all manner of things for years to come. It is absolutely dreadful. I want to ask you this. You're a unionist, and I would be a nationalist, and we're guys that can breathe the same air and live in the same place because we have respect for one another. One of the things that's really cheesed me off is this notion. Now, I'm not in any way saying that it's okay for there to be a border in Ireland. I'm not at all, by the way. I'm what I would call a genuine Brexiteer, a complete severance with the EU, no deal or any of that nonsense. But I hope David is... Are you still there, David?
Yeah.
I thought there was a little click. I thought I'd lost you. Anyway, here's the thing that's annoyed me over the last few weeks. This notion that people like you and people like me back home are animals. And if there is the imposition of, I don't know, kind of minor inconveniences or minor checks, that this would somehow damage or put in jeopardy the Good Friday Agreement, and it might lead to a return to the bad old days. That really pissed me off. Because I don't believe that. What do you think of that?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it suggests that those of us who live on this island, you know, basically we're just sort of a heartbeat away from tearing each other's throats if there are minor customs arrangements put in place.
Yeah.
It's so ludicrous. And of course, the entire backstop is a fallacious argument in the first place. It was, to my mind, it's essentially a land grab by the EU, which Leo Varadkar was very happy to go along with, one of their little marionettes. It's a land grab of a part of the UK from the European Union. That's what the backstop is, or was. And all that Boris has done is essentially rebrand it, knock it up the middle of the Irish Sea, and off we go. And actually, Richie, you know, another concern I have on this is the new, what's being proposed is, if you can say to the people of Northern Ireland, right, you can stay in the single market. You're in the single market. You're in the customs union for another 6 years minimum, but more likely 8 years, I think, based on the maths of the treaty. Then why shouldn't Scotland have the same deal? I mean, I'm no fan of the SNP, but I believe in sort of fairness. So if Northern Ireland can get this exceptionality, why couldn't Scotland? And if it's such a good deal, Richie, as Boris tells it, why is he denying it to the people of England and Wales? Or is the whole thing just deceit from start to finish? Is this yet another conservative leader who poses as Churchill, but he's much closer to Chamberlain, quite happy to sell us out in order to get his little toxic deal across the piece? That's what I think. I think Boris is a charlatan. I think he's a fraud. I think he's a man who will say and do anything to try and get his way. And his primary concern, Richie, is staying in Downing Street. And that explains everything over the last couple of weeks. And then all that's happened is his little toy soldiers all around him in the Conservative benches have been good little boys and girls and fallen into line. They're a pathetic bunch. And I fully understand the enragement of those, for example, in the DUP. I'm no huge fan of the DUP, Richie. But in this one, they've been well and truly shafted by Boris, and it's obvious. And you know, it just shows that I don't think you can trust this man. So I find myself, and I'll be really honest with you here, and this is almost unimaginable coming from me, I've heard Corbyn say things and other members of the Labour Party that have been more honest than what Conservatives have said. You know, even the Labour Party can see exactly that which Boris is doing. So, you know, Brexit has shone a light into the darkness of the British political establishment, Richie. And the stuff that we see isn't nice, but I'm glad we see it.
What's the alternative? Some of my listeners will say, and I think my listeners are a pretty broad church in terms of their political leanings. I certainly don't fall into, well, the show doesn't fall into any category because I speak to everybody. Doesn't matter what your point of view is. What is the alternative? I don't believe, you see, me being a socialist as I am, and I would describe myself as a real socialist, I don't believe that Nigel Farage's kind of free market capitalist approach to a kind of a post-UK or a post-EU UK, if that makes any sense, us being out of it. I don't see that being, you know, the way forward. I don't think that's a great outlook for the country going forward. Is there any alternative? You mentioned Corbyn, David. Corbyn would drive me around a bend as, again, somebody who thinks of himself as a socialist, knowing that he spent so much of his career pointing out to people what is wrong with the European Union, something I believe former Tory leader Ian Duncan Smith said to Corbyn in the House of Commons today. You know, rank hypocrite, David Corbyn, all these years explaining what the European Union is, and then because of his own political aspirations, going against it. The people who voted, David, what's the alternative for them going forward? People who voted to leave.
Yeah, well, you see, this is where we're maybe going to disagree, but I'll be straight with you. I mean, ultimately, what I want is, I do want a clean break Brexit. I want out of the EU at every cost and any cost, but I want properly out, which is not what Boris is proposing. Yeah. And the reason I want out, Richie, is because I believe the EU is slowly but surely turning into this vast tyranny, you know, pummeling its people, its citizens in the streets of Paris and Toulouse, Barcelona. You see the thuggery, the jackbooted thuggery of the European Union. So I want a United Kingdom that's out of that. In fact, I'd love to see an Ireland out of it as well. And so what then happens when we leave the European Union? That can be then an issue for the people of the UK. And, you know, and if they're more socialistic, say like yourself, Richie, then we can live with that. And if they're more capitalisty, like say me, we can live with that. But the fundamental thing is we won't get either if we're still captured and still under the flag of the European Union. So the primary motivation is to get out. Because if we stay in, we're doomed. And worse, if we stay in, the EU will have proven nobody leaves.
I agree with you. Listen. I agree with every single thing you said there. And it's one of my greatest bugbears is this definition of socialism. Anybody who knows anything about old socialists like, you know, former Chilean leaders, and we're talking about Allende and people like that, these are not people who punished business owners or who punished the wealthy or who stole from them. They didn't. I'm not against companies and businesses and corporations making money. And, you know, I'm a believer in a rising tide, you know, kind of lifting all ships and all of that. My only concern with Farage, and I've interviewed plenty of Brexit Party people on this programme, and I have said it to them in the past, my concern, I absolutely agree with you, the European Union is a tyranny and it's getting worse. Get out of it, absolutely. My concern would be then that people like Farage and others would look to sell off the UK bit by bit to corporations. And that would be a big concern of mine. And that's all I would say on that. You know, historically, what do you think about that? That's a genuine concern. Do you understand that?
I do, and I completely get that. And actually, Richie, I think your concern might be quite broadly shared in the UK. I don't think the UK is necessarily a country that would embrace some of the more free market things that Nigel Farage, or even I might say. I think the UK has swung to a more, let's say, gently socialist kind of perspective. Because if you think about, for example, this so-called conservative government, I mean, only today they're talking about, oh well, yeah, let's provide electric cars with you know free access to our cities. Meanwhile, let's tax the hell out of petrol vehicles. Let's charge car owners £600 a year to be able to park at their place of work.
Madness.
So we don't have we don't even have a conservative government. So actually, Richie, you have a better chance of getting your socialism through the fake Tories than you
Let me argue with you. Let me argue with you. You see, and again, no genuine socialist anywhere in the world would agree with those lunatic progressive policies. This social justice crap. Real socialism has got nothing to do with any of that. There aren't any real socialists left anywhere in Europe, let alone in the UK, David. And I'm a student of it, of socialism. No, I'm honest to God, whether it's Salvador Allende, whether it's Bolivar, whether it's Guevara, whether it's Hugo Chavez, who you might have a lot of issues with, these guys would never endorse any of these lunatic policies. They wouldn't. They just wouldn't. This is social democracy. It's not socialism. Drives me bloody mad. Go on.
I completely agree with that, actually. And it's a very fair distinction to make, Richie. You know, this kind of progressive, woke social liberalism, which is across the piece, isn't socialism. I do get that, and I respect that point of view. But I believe in a post-Brexit UK, it should be possible for people to put their points of view and, regardless of be they right, left, or whatever, you know, whatever prevails. The thing is, if we don't leave it, then we're just essentially, you know, a sub-post office of an increasingly tyrannical European Union, which will crush everything and every nation and every country it has under its auspices. So you see, I think the UK, we're the canary, if you like, in the coal mine. If we are crushed and don't get out, nobody's getting out. And we wonder, where might that lead us, Richie? Then,
absolutely.
You know?
Listen, some of my Irish listeners will be annoyed with David because David is a unionist. His characterisation of Leo Varadkar. I've already had a couple of tweets and I've had a couple of emails. Let me tell you, whatever David's political opinions are, his characterisation of Leo Varadkar as a marionette is coined. Varadkar is nothing but a whore for the European Union and a mouthpiece for Donald Tusk and Jean-Claude Juncker. This is a guy who allows some German guys fly into Dublin Airport to dictate to him what his budget can and can't be. So David's characterisation of Leo Varadkar was kind and generous, I would say.
Yeah, I think it is. And actually, if I could just pile on the back of that and say, I, as a unionist, support Irish nationalists. Ireland fought to be a free country, Richie. It didn't fight to be, again, just a subdivision told by the European Union what to do. So that's why I despise the Irish political class, because they've bent the knee to the European Union, just in the same way as I despise the British political class.
Absolutely.
You know, so I'm actually very consistent in this. And I, as I say, I mean, maybe your Irish listeners should think about this. As an Ulster unionist, so to speak, I reach out to Irish nationalists because I'm saying to them, you guys should not be happy with Dublin, with Varadkar, or, you know, with Coveney, or the sort of the 2040 replacement that they're underway and pushing for Ireland, you guys should be very worried, and we should find ways to work with each other and not attack each other. So I don't attack Irish people, but I do attack the Irish political political establishment, Richie.
No, the point was fair.
They are marionettes.
The point was fair. David can be found at altnewsmedia.net. He's on Twitter as well. There's only one David Vance. So if you look for David on Twitter, you'll find him. Biasbbc.org will talk about your history of, I suppose, calling out the BBC for what the BBC does, because Nicky Morgan, the Culture Secretary, has been talking about the licence fee. We'll talk about that in a second, if you can stay with me till the top of the hour. It's good to have you on. I know you've had a busy day. You've been doing a lot of television today. So David Vance is our guest. Censorship is getting, it's getting more and more serious, and I read altnewsmedia.net. I'm not virtue signalling here now, but I do go out of my way to read good writers who would take a different perspective on things than me. It's good to be challenged in your own kind of thinking. So altnewsmedia.net, it's a good website, some very good articles on there, some good writers. I couldn't find anything looking through the website that could be construed as harmful. Now, I'm somebody who knows a little bit about, having worked in national and commercial media, I understand what Ofcom is, what it does, how it works, and it's what it expects of media organisations. Nothing wrong with the content there, and I understand. And this really cheeses me off, because companies like PayPal and Google and Facebook and Twitter, they are kind of state-like in their width and in their breadth and in their scope. They are gigantic things, and PayPal has decided to prevent people from submitting sponsorship and money to altnewsmedia.net by basically saying you can't use their facilities anymore. That is true, I believe, David, is it? If it is, it's a disgrace. What's happened there?
Yes, it is. Essentially, Richie, we got notification about a week ago from PayPal fundamentally saying that they were suspending our account, terminating it, that the funds would be frozen for 6 months, at the end of which they would review the situation in terms of could we get the funds even back. So all our income flows have been cut off by PayPal. There's been no reason given. We have asked for a clarification, because I can stand over the site. We talk about all loads of issues, climate change. We talk about Kashmir. We talk about loads of issues. And I'm particular to make sure that the writers, everything is decent as it should be. So it's actually part of a broader piece. Let's call it out for what it is. Voices such as mine are being closed down. This has happened to my friends like Katie Hopkins. It's happened, I believe, to other people, which I'll not name, but I'm aware of other people, including a prominent Irish person who has fallen, who has in the last week or so had the same thing happen to them. So this is how the left, or the feral left, as I call them, Richie, this is how they go after free speech. They try to close us down, and if they can't do that, they cut off the money supply. And that's exactly what's happening. And, they will come for all of us bit by bit. They figure, well, if you can't get cash, you can't do anything, which of course is true. So PayPal has just closed everything, and annoyingly, and it's in their terms and conditions. You know, if you read through all 1,000 pages of their T's and C's, they retain the right to hold on to your cash for 6 months. So I wonder how much interest they make in that. But that's what's happened. That's what they say, and that's it. There we have it. So, Richie, we've moved within the past week. We've set up an alternative payment system so people can, if they want to give us a help and help us make a small contribution there. And we'll not be silenced. And let's just be clear to those haters who I'm sure have mass reported alt news media to PayPal, you won't succeed. You'll never shut me up. So just, get over it and just get a life. We will continue and we will be heard, Richie. It's that simple.
It's a brilliant attitude to have. Yeah, listen, it's not about me, but just for a tiny bit of balance, I understand why conservative commentators are worried and think that they're being targeted exclusively. I think you might be being targeted more, but it's not exclusive. We had a YouTube channel with 100,000 subscribers 18 months ago, and it was beginning to make a few bob on a monthly basis for this programme, and it was deleted for an interview I did with a guy in America who said some stuff that offended some people, despite the fact that I challenged them and disagreed with them all the way. They just deleted the channel. But I hear you. It does appear in this instance that it is, you know, conservative channels are being targeted. Do you know what really pisses me off about this? I would imagine somebody has made some complaint to PayPal. Along the lines of, we saw the story this week where Flora Margarine were told not to advertise anymore on Mumsnet because, God forbid, some of the Mumsnet users believe that a woman is a woman and a man who thinks he's a woman isn't really a woman. And Flora just capitulated. And it seems to me, David, that companies are capitulating not on the say-so of thousands of people, because I could understand it. If PayPal had tens of thousands of people saying, hey, that David Vance, he's a bit of a Nazi. You're not, of course, David, a Nazi. You're not. But if tens of thousands went, oh, David's a bit of a Nazi, you could imagine a moment of pause. But it's probably one person or two who says, oh, he's a bit of a bastard and he hates this and he hates that. That's what's really worrying about it.
Well, I think that, Richie, and the fact that they won't actually explain the reason. Yeah. So I'm happy to stand and debate any point that someone would say, you know, if they said this article was offensive or this statement within an article was offensive. But that's not the name of the game. You're quite right. And actually, again, Richie, you're right to just sort of bring me up a little bit. I know, and because I follow a load of people, that people on the left as well on social media have been targeted and have been closed down if they dare step out of the hive think. So you're absolutely right. It doesn't really, but this is the problem we have, and that's why I try to set up Alt News Media and turn it into something, because the platforms, the big corporate platforms, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and the funders, PayPal, and the rest of them, these organizations are very amenable to Twitter to mobs. Social media mobs who will, maybe half a dozen of them, get together, do mass report, and the PayPals of this world don't want to get involved. Although I think PayPal's quite woke, actually. So the more I've discovered about PayPal, Richie, the more I'm glad to have nothing to do with PayPal. But ahead of the US presidential election next year, I do suspect that conservatives broadly and those of us who would support Trump, you know, will find difficulties. So, it's one of these things. I just basically put my shoulder down. I don't give up. I don't give in. And I have nothing but contempt for PayPal and the sad little trolls who choose to report Alt News Media and myself. I'm reported, Richie, on a daily basis for the most innocuous stuff.
Opinions.
If I tweeted the sky was blue, somebody somewhere would say that was racism.
Just for an opinion, yeah. And it's very important that independent, because I know that when Alt News Media gets, you know, banned by PayPal, you'll get independent content creators on the left cheering for that. And it's so short-sighted that, and it's so pathetic, it's almost untrue. Because everybody who's creating anything independently that's, you know, offering a different perspective or a different point of view is going to be fair game. You made a very good point there a second ago. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with your content or anything that you've said. You've got some very interesting points of view, interesting perspectives. They're reasoned and thought out. Don't always agree with it, but who cares? What the hell do I know? I'm just another guy with opinions. But people need to wise up to what's happening. And I go ahead.
I want to be able to provide a platform for the voices that have been silenced. In a way, the whole point of the platform is to let people who can't get their views out, get their views out. So, you know, and people are then totally at liberty to agree or disagree. That's all fine. But it's just this suppression of free speech, which is very much, you know, in part of the psyche at the moment, where we've never had more social media channels and we're being allowed to say less and less and less. There are some subjects, and you'll know them as well as me, that if I try to talk about them on social media, I'd be shut down instantly.
Gone.
What does that say, Richie? You know, I mean, I feel we've arrived in 1984 plus these days, and free speech is basically a shadow of what it is.
It's shocking, David. Can I just interject there before we briefly talk about the BBC, because I know you've got other things to do. Yeah. We've now got national newspapers ringing people up and asking them, why did you go on a certain programme? I mean, it's staggering. I've had conversations with Anne Widdecombe, who was contacted by The Guardian to say, what did you go on his show? He hosted a guy who's got anti-Semitic ideas. I did, but it doesn't mean that I do. I interviewed a guy who denied the Holocaust. Yes, I did, but I don't. I don't agree with that. And that's really spooky that you can say, oh, avoid that platform. Why? Oh, because he's interviewed somebody that we don't like. And that sort of thinking is catching fire, David. It's getting popular, isn't it?
Richie, that's a really crucial point, and listeners should think about what you've just said, because it's guilt by
association,
a third-party association. You do nothing wrong. And again, someone could comment on one of my social media platforms or an alt-news media or a biased BBC. They could comment, and that comment, which has nothing to do with me, could be taken and used to bring me down.
Shocking.
And that's where we're going, so you're spot on.
Yeah, it's really important. Now, listen, just before we run out of time, David Vance, by the way, David is on Twitter. You can find it's @DVATW on Twitter. And it's alt, say it for me, oh yeah, altnewsmedia.net.
Altnewsmedia.net.
That's the one. altnewsmedia.net. Check it out if you haven't before, particularly if you are on the left. Check it out. You know, read something that doesn't tell you what you want to hear from time to time. It does you no harm at all. Here's a quick one for you. Nicky Morgan, Culture Secretary. Oh, be Jesus, I'm excited. The idea they might abolish the TV licence and tell the BBC, go and compete with Netflix and all the rest. Now, as a long-time critic of the BBC, what do you think of this?
It's almost reason to open a bottle of champagne, Richie. The idea that the great parasite, the 3.8 billion a year parasite, the BBC, would actually have to compete for our cash rather than insist on it in term under threat of legal action and possible criminalization of a person, fills me with delight. You know, we live in 2019. We're not in 1930 anymore. BBC, Stalinistic anachronism, out of time, out of ideas. And so I would be very pleased if Nicky Morgan or anyone else for that matter made it compete on the same basis as everybody else, rather than allowing it this outrageous platform in which it bleeds us dry and produces drivel, propaganda, and of course, endless bias.
And final comment on that, and thanks for that. You've even got Andrew Marr admitting what it is. You know, when Marr comes out and says, yes, it is this liberal organisation with too many young people, with too many gays and lesbians. Now, listen, nobody has anything against any gays and lesbians, but over-representation of all these woke groups, it's rubbish. When Marr comes out and says it, it's time to give up on it, isn't it, David?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I mean, they are damned by their own words, and they've become, I mean, they were biased to start with, they've become even more woke in recent years. Essentially, they're feminizing the BBC at a cosmic scale, whereby, you know, it's the number of women reporters, not that I have anything against women reporters, quite keen on them, but the proliferation, it's amusing. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I again apply the same standards to the BBC as myself. You know, we should all be forced to go out and compete, Richie, to get listeners and viewers. The BBC instead forces us to fund it when it does that. And that's the fundamental wrong, and that's what needs to be sorted out. You know, I totally disagree with state TV. It's something belonging to another era, and it's got no place actually in the UK or indeed Ireland for that matter. We should get rid of state TV. It's had its day, and I hope Nicky Morgan considers a lot more and does something about it.
Hey, listen, next time we have a chat, I'll pull you up on that about RT being state TV. Listen, I've got nothing against RT. I like them a lot, but I could jump down your throat now and say, what about RT? But look, we'll take that up another time, because you're right about the BBC. David, thanks for giving us your time today, mate. Always good to chat with you.
My pleasure.
Cheers, buddy. Cheers, look after yourself. David Vance there, live on the Richie Allen Show, Tuesday, October 22nd. Find David at altnewsmedia.net, and he's on Twitter at DVATW as well. Check him out if you haven't before. Always, I think he's always fair-minded, is David. He's always up for a conversation. Now, Cassie Crowhurst will be on the show in a couple of minutes. Time, she's just jumped in there. She's jumped into the, I don't know, what would you call it? The cyberspheric room. Yes, the cyberspheric room. Right, before we hear from Cassie, we will take headlines from FSN, because who knows what's happened since we've been chatting away. Headlines from FSN, I'm sure it's Ollie, back with more in about 30 seconds' time. Okay.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Justin Trudeau will serve another term as Canada's Prime Minister after his Liberal Party won a plurality of seats in Parliament. Farmers are protesting outside public offices across rural France, saying they're being ignored by the government. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson's mounting what could be a last chance attempt to push his Brexit deal through Parliament, and protests have rocked major cities in Sudan, with thousands calling for a dissolution of the former ruling party of deposed leader Omar al-Bashir.
Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. The time is there, coming up for 4 minutes past the hour. The Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019. Back in a sec.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Right, when we come back in a second, we're going to be talking about a council sex education website which is telling 12-year-old girls about masturbation, about porn, and about other pretty, well, bizarre and very strong or very, I don't know, edgy sexual practices. And when we come back, if you've got children in the room, you might want to take them out of the room, because I'm going to read the first two paragraphs of the article. And there are some sexual descriptions in the article, which was in the Metro newspaper today in print. It was on the website yesterday. And we'll talk about it with Cassie Crowhurst, who's a parent and who is a citizen journalist who's got a big following on Facebook, talks about these things on Facebook. She's also a wellness coach, and she's following this story closely. So, to take us there, we're going to have a tune. This is music from The Who. It's The Seeker on your Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, October 22nd, Europe's most listened to independent radio show. And it really is, by the way. Cassie Crowhurst is next. Yeah, it's music from The Who, The Seeker on The Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live from Salford in Greater Manchester. Multiple platforms, TuneIn Radio, of course, richieallen.co.uk, triggerwarning.co.uk, and of course the programme is live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. I tell you what, this isn't funny, this is serious stuff, this. And I came across this because I do check in with my next guest. I check in on her Facebook page from time to time. I don't have Facebook, I'm not on it, but I do have access to the Richie Allen Show Facebook page, which I don't use, but it's there. Listen to this. This was in the Metro newspaper today. So if you were on the tram in Manchester, or on the tube in London, or on the buses anywhere, you would have read this today. Council sex website teaches children about... Right, if you've got children, don't let them listen to the next bit. I'm going to read the first bit of this article. So if you've got kids, don't let them hear any of this. All right? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Turn it down and listen to it later on. Council sex website teaches children about bukkake and being caught masturbating. A council sex education website has come under fire for telling a 12-year-old girl it was perfectly natural to spend half the night masturbating and watching porn. This is Warwickshire County Council, which has, to be fair, temporarily suspended its Respect Yourself website after campaign groups said it was normalising sadomasochistic sex and porn. The website was aimed at 13 to 25-year-olds and described niche sex acts such as fisting, felching, Jesus, I'm going to say it, cock and ball torture, and bukkake. And I've looked at it. They were. This isn't some hysterical group of people shrieking that we've got to protect the children. The website was really talking about this stuff to young children. How? How does that happen? A spokeswoman for Safe Schools Alliance, Tracy Shaw, told the Metro, "It's totally inappropriate. Teenagers are already under so much pressure because of what they see in porn. This website is normalising it and the type of sex teenagers are unlikely to get." My next guest was on the programme earlier this year. She's very interested in these issues and other issues. She's a citizen journalist and vlogger and regularly live streams on Facebook, where she's got a very healthy audience there. She also works as a wellness coach. She talks about human interest issues and also child safety, the safety of children in schools and in general. Cassie Crowhurst, welcome back to our programme. How are you?
I'm good, Richie. Thank you for having me back on.
Well, it's only right and proper I invite you back on because you follow these issues and this issue in general. If I'd seen that maybe a year or two ago, I would have thought this is the wind-up. Somebody is putting it out there so that somebody like me or you will get hysterical and then they will say, ah, no, it's only a joke. It's not a joke, though. How does this sort of stuff happen? And you're a parent, of course, of youngsters, to know that councils are putting stuff online there. I mean, this is councils saying, look, here's some information for children. What do you make of it, Cassie? What's going on?
Outraged, quite frankly. I picked up on this back in September. I've just bought some stuff up off my page. I covered this back in September because I caught it in the national press again. There was outraged parents regarding this sex educational program that's being put out into Middle England. So 240 schools, Warwickshire was one of the counties, to roll out this new sexual education program. And then when I started looking into it, it was on Warwickshire County Council's website. Now, the one that you've seen today is under Respect Yourself. The guy that's promoting this, his name's Johnny Hunt. Now, he's kind of affiliated with that Respect Yourself website. But back in September, Warwickshire County Council, the actual website, was stating things on there about the... And they've taken it down because quite a lot of us started to pick this up. There was another activist. He started to phone the council. I phoned the council. Then the council put a notification onto their website saying, oh, here you are. We have been receiving a lot of comments on the All About Me program. Now, the All About Me program was... this program that was being rolled out into the schools. It says the All About Me program of relationship education. We want to reassure you that this is thoroughly researched, evidence-based program, fully complying with the Department of Education guidelines. We understand that the recent media coverage has made highly inaccurate claims, which has produced some strong reactions. Now, when you look under the page that they took down because they were getting a lot of phone calls, they were getting it. They had the heat on them. They removed it. But those of us that are very clever, we obviously take screen prints as evidence. Now, I want to read you. Now, this is outrageous, right? This is clearly stated under the heading children aged 0 to 4 years of age. Even at this stage, sexual behaviour is beginning to emerge through actions like exploratory behaviours such as touch, taste, looking, lots of hugs and kisses, showing interest in body parts and how they work, talking about private parts and using words like poo, willy, bum, playing games such as housewives and daddies and doctors. Right, I could go on. what sick pervert is looking at those innocent things that children do and they explore, but saying it's showing sexual behaviour?
And this was definitely on the website of the council, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a screen print and I can show you. It was Warwickshire County Council and it was under their All About Me page. Oh, here you are. And here's the nice thing. So under 0 to 4 years of age, self-stimulation, i.e. masturbation, is common amongst children from around 3 months old, involving friction, rhythmic rocking, pressing thighs together and rubbing genitals against objects. Right, 0 to 4.
That's crazy.
And then there's this stuff that we started to find out. This was in under their curriculum. We've got here, and I've highlighted it, children would consider their own rules of how they like to be touched by others and the rules of when it's appropriate to touch themselves, including self-stimulation. And then obviously I've shown that they've, they've got a bit here about touching yourself. So as part of teaching safe and appropriate touching, we need to also talk to children about touching themselves and self-stimulation. If you've already read The Healthy Sexual Development of Children, you'll be aware that most children of ages tend to self-stimulate. Like, what? So obviously I've picked this up, and then when I've started looking into it, I then obviously do what I do. I start covering it because it's outrageous.
You rang them. What's interesting is they put out a statement saying that this was sensational, that some people had made some sensational allegations. But at the same time, they had deleted these pages. So they've basically been telling porky pies, basically, because this stuff was out there on their website.
Yeah, why remove it? If they've got nothing to hide, as they've clearly had on their website, and it's all above board, and they've got research to support this, and it's all fine, why have they removed it? And apparently, according to them, people have jumped to like kind of conclusions. No, people like myself, when I picked this up, I straight away phoned my local school. Now, I'm not in that county. I phoned and spoke to the school and I wanted to find out whether they were teaching this. And I've been reassured, and it's not in my school. It's not in that county.
What did they say exactly, Cassie? Because this is the interesting thing. So you and others rang Warwickshire County Council. When you ring up and you take, I'm sure you take, a kind of a moderate approach when you ring up, you know, you're polite,
yeah,
and you say, look, this stuff is on the website, what's going on? Do you get any answer? Did they say, go on?
They said they've had other calls and they wanted to just take my details and look into it. Well, I didn't leave my details, but someone else I know, he's very active on it, Jamie Bennett, he contacted them and told them, he got through to one of their departments and said, you need to remove it. Take the information down. This is outrageous. And then obviously there's a lot of us are now connected. Facebook has got its good and bad points. So he's raised it, I've raised it. And then you could see on the Warwickshire County Council when they've put that statement, and a lot of us, because I did, I was like, really, why have you, if you've got nothing to hide, why have you deleted it? And here's your screen print, here's your evidence to prove otherwise. And yeah, I feel they buckled under the pressure and then they've deleted it. And I checked yesterday because I saw the Metro article, and that page is still taken down, and the Respect Yourself as well. Because like I say, I covered this, my last post was September the 25th. Like really looking into this, and it's outrageous. Like, where's the other documentation? This was the other thing that I found as well. Now, these are things that have been written in documentation. Where is it? It was the other one about primary school sex education, education pattern. Now, this was aged at 7 years. And they start talking about anal intercourse, masturbation, the clitoris, oral sex.
With 7-year-olds.
Aimed, recommended for 7-year-olds. 7+.
Jesus Christ Almighty.
7+. My son is going to be 7, early next year.
Your son is going to be 7. Do you know, neither, you mentioned, I think, when we had a chat this morning, you mentioned a very good word. You said prudish. neither of us, you certainly don't come across as kind of Mary Whitehouse, you know what I mean? Kind of old-fashioned Mary Whitehouse. It's not that at all. But when, and again, if you have children in the room, I would advise that they're not in the room for this conversation. These are words I never thought I'd be using on the radio as long as I lived. But things like fisting and felching, we know what they are.
I didn't know what felching was. I had to Google it with my friend earlier, and I was like, oh my God.
I used to do a late night show in Spain with a couple of crazy doctors that was for adults. It was a male show. And all sorts of things were discussed on the programme, sexual things. And that's a gay, it's not exclusively a gay practice, but it's something that gay men do. I'm not going to describe it at all or anything like it, but it's out there. Now, the idea that it would be time for a 13-year-old boy or girl to be hearing about fisting or felching, which could be described as aggressive and certainly humiliating sexual practices, I've got to wonder, Cassie, why? Why? Who? It can't just be a mistake or bad policy. Because people, they do have bad ideas, right? People have bad ideas. And then you say, look, that's a bad idea. To me, this seems to be something even more sinister.
It's definitely sinister. When you look at, well, you're awake, Richie, the stuff that you cover, you know there's an agenda, and the agenda is quite clearly to over-sexualise children. And then that obviously ties into the whole paedophilia element, and let's not touch on that. But there is definitely an agenda, because, like, I'm not prudish. And, yes, we do need sexual education, but not teaching this stuff for 7 years of age, not even 13. Now, that website that they've taken down, the respect was aimed at 13 years of age.
Who wrote those? See, this is the thing, and I know you've asked this. Cassie Crowhurst is our guest. You can find Cassie on Twitter. You can find her on Facebook. You can find her in lots of places. We'll put out links to where you can find her Facebook page if you haven't come across it before. Some of our listeners will have come across it before. See, this is the nuts and bolts with any journalist, any concerned citizen. Who the bloody hell came up with the idea to talk about fisting to 13-year-olds or to talk about anal sex with 7-year-olds? We need to know who wrote that bloody advice. Do we know?
Haven't got, well, actually, no, I do know. Now, the man is called Johnny.
Oh, this is the guy. Oh, Johnny. Oh, you mentioned him earlier on. Okay. Oh, I didn't get that. So he, it's him, it's his guideline. Ah, you okay. See, right.
Johnny,
who is this guy?
Okay, so you've got, where is it? It's definitely Johnny Hunt. He's got a Twitter page, and his thing is going off the rails. Now, he's the one that is responsible for that respect yourself. I'm just trying to find it now.
That's a program, isn't it? Because we've heard about this in schools, because they've begun to talk to very young children in schools about masturbation. This is why predominantly Asian parents in the Midlands, but it's not just Asian parents. A lot of white people there as well cheesed off about the things they're talking about in schools with children, and they do want to talk about self-touching with children at a very young age. This is a wider agenda. Go ahead, Cassie. I cut across you there.
Yeah, why? But why? Why? Why does a seven-year-old... Like, this is what I've... Kids touch themselves, okay? It's like a body part. Sometimes they could be picking their nose and, like, it could be really nice. Like, yeah. It's the same thing. If they're touching... Like, they're just touching themselves and it feels nice, because obviously you're going to get a nice sensation out of it. They're going to do it, but you don't need to put in the perverse element that it's like a sexual thing at 7 years of age.
No, listen.
They're going down the route of, like... parents are going, don't do that. Don't, like, shaming. Don't touch that. Don't do it. It's kind of like, where do you draw the line? Like, I'll tell you who else. Do you remember Embarrassing Bodies? Do you remember Christian, Dr. Christian?
Oh, I do. I know all about this guy. He spends quite a bit of time trolling mothers who ask questions about vaccines.
Okay, do you know what he come up with? Now, I had to pull away from all this stuff because when I got shown that, I started to get really angry. Now, this guy is on TV. Oh, this guy, he's got some kind of credibility. Now, it was on BBC, it was some radio, and he was saying that children should be shown, right, here's an oxymoron, age-appropriate pornography. No, pornography is pornography. It's over 18. You cannot have age-appropriate. But he's saying and suggesting, because we've got, which we do, we've got a problem where porn is accessed, you can access it from your phone. And there's a lot of children that not getting the safeguarding. So they're going onto these sites. And a lot of these kids are seeing sexual acts, like we were talking earlier. There's a lot of pornography now that's really hardcore.
Violent,
abusive.
Yeah.
And they kind of, they're in the mindset that that's kind of acceptable and that's normal sort of thing. So what he's saying is, children should be shown aggressive pornography and then explaining them that that's not the way you have sex.
Right, let me jump in there. Cathy Crowhurst is our guest. Let me take his point of view just for a second. I don't agree with it, but let me jump into his shoes. Maybe he thinks that children seeing this stuff because of their access now to the devices, he might think it's inevitable. It's an inevitability. They're going to see it. There's nothing we can do. The horse has bolted the stable, Cathy, right? So he says, they're going to see it, so let's get in there. If that's his argument, and I don't know if it is or not, is there some validity to that? Is there some sense to that at all? Or do you think absolutely not? Can you? I mean, you've got young children yourself, and I'd love to have children, Cathy, maybe in the very near future, please God, right? But I dread this stuff. You as a mum and your children's father, can you possibly prevent them from being exposed to this stuff?
For me, right, whenever I pick stuff up like this, I'm on at my school. I'm straight away on it. That's why I phone my school. You teaching my kids this? I'm straight on it. Because if they are, then I will not have my kids being taught this stuff. It's inappropriate and it's not age appropriate. I believe kids do need to be taught, but not at that, not seven.
No, I totally agree with you. No, I think you might have just missed my point. I totally agree with you. Let me just make my point again. What if they say to you, the school now, Hey Cathy, we hear you. 100% we hear you. But they're going to see this stuff in the playground, whether you like it or not. What do you say to that? Do you think you can prevent them from seeing it in the playground? Look, I don't agree with them. I'm just being the devil's advocate here. Do you think you, as a mum, can? Go ahead.
Well, I suppose it's going down the route of, like, violent stuff. We don't really watch the TV, and I'm very careful what they do watch. And I've always raised, like, my son with the whole violence. So they know if, like, a film, it's, like, violent, I don't want them watching. So... But then it's still addressed. I was just going to say, making the point, like, if they see something like that, then they're not to watch. My son's quite good like that. Oh, no, that's violent, mummy, and I shouldn't watch that. But how can I address the fact that, oh, son, you might see two people, like, naked, do it, having play fighting. I don't know, however.
Yeah, I hear you.
I don't watch it. It's not for you. It could be violent. I don't know. This is the problem. I do understand we are living in a technological age now where smartphones, you've just got access to it.
It's a madhouse, Cathy. It's a bloody madhouse. Your answer is a good answer. But I would also say that it's your responsibility anyway, as his parents, that if your young lad sees something and he's got confusion about it, it's mum and dad that should be having a chat with him about it. It should not be teachers in schools, it should not be the state, it should not be the government. On that, I will 100% agree with you. 100%. Cathy Crowhurst is, I guess, it's a huge story, this. It's massive. And it's going to kick off again up and down the country as this programme of teaching this stuff to youngsters in schools is going to recommence. Parents, Cathy, that you meet, not just obviously through your own work on Facebook and elsewhere, but parents that you meet around the schools, do they even know, many of them, that this is happening, or is life so bloody crazy that they're not even aware that it's happening? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. It's definitely the latter. Parents, they're just, you know, they're so focused on the work and life, and you feel that for most people, they trust these institutions, they trust the schools that are educating the best, and this sort of information wouldn't be in there. And the other thing on this is being made compulsory. This issue that we've got now, it is being made compulsory. So you cannot take your child out of them lessons.
There's no opt-out. And you mentioned, I think you said earlier on, that at your son's school, this hasn't begun yet. But you'll have to watch this very closely, of course.
Yeah, it's not. I'm very hot on it. Like, for example, the transgender stuff as well. I've asked them before, like, are you teaching my children that? No, it's not in the county. And, you know, they know, the head teacher I've spoken to, they know I'm very vocal. I'm a active activist, and it's not for being difficult. It's very much, I'm very passionate, and anything that comes to, because, okay, I'm not in Warwickshire, but this could soon be drip fed down into my county, and this is on my doorstep. So I have to vocalise.
Yeah, you have to talk about it. Here's the question. It's not meant to be negative at all, or it's not meant to worry you. And I don't mean to worry any other mums who might be listening to this. Look, I've had people on the programme before who've stood up and asked questions, and they've advocated for their children, and they've tried to protect their children. And before they knew it, they had a health visitor knocking on the door. And that's a bit scary, Cassie. Yeah. I do worry we're going down this road. You know, I've interviewed people whom they've not wanted to vaccinate, for example. There's a story in The Guardian today about Totnes in Devon, which we're all very interested in, because 5G, and they've agreed to kind of have a closer look at 5G, which is a good thing, in Totnes. But there are some women there who've said they're not vaccinating because they're worried about vaccines, not because they're anti-vaxxers, but because they're worried. And my concern is that when parents speak up, that maybe, you know, the old local authority might send somebody around to have a closer look, and I'd be very concerned about that. Is that something, again, I'm not trying to worry you or anybody else, is that something you've had to consider in your activism around these issues?
Yeah, when I started touching on the whole child abuse stuff, yeah, I did get very concerned, because I was like, oh God, I'm over the target, and I'm being very, very vocal. And that video, you know, I think it's had something like 2.4 million. It was just like,
Jesus,
yeah. Okay, I've put my head well above the parapet. And then I stepped right back, and I said I would never get caught back up in this stuff again. And then the British Naturism, while I was back on your show.
Yeah, I remember that.
I get caught up on it. And then again, I've caught wind of this, because it's just a natural response for me. I'm very much like I'm a voice for just the voiceless, and I can't sit back and not say anything. But in terms of, like, for example, like the vaccinations, in my school, it's a non-consent. So I'm never difficult. I won't ever create a big thing about it. It's literally like, I know they'll be doing the flu shot, the nasal spray soon.
Oh, Jesus. Tell me about that. Cassie, this is really important as well. Cassie Crowhurst is our guest. Find her on Facebook. I'll put a link out if you haven't been on there before. Very amiable, genial, funny, nicely presented presentations on Facebook about these issues. Lot of views, a lot of people interested in it. Oh, here we come. Yeah, the old, because the vaccine for the youngsters is a nasally ingested vaccine for the flu. And from what I'm hearing, you won't be happy with your lad getting it.
No, they haven't. I stopped vaccinating at the three, when they were due their boosters at three, I stopped. And I stopped because I started to look into this stuff. And even the last sort of 48 hours, I've been heavily covered. No, actually, it's been the last couple of weeks, because I can see in the media it's problem, reaction, solution. So they've got this whole MMR, like it's dropping down. And you can see it's covered in the newspaper. It's on This Morning. They're already talking about it on BBC. And the health minister is like, we can't have this. We're going to have to fine parents. And you can see this is where they're going. Now, that whole debate, like, I am not anti-vax. I am about being informed of everything that's involved in vaccines, and they are touted as safe and effective. They're not safe because they carry risk, but this information isn't given to you. So how can you make an informed decision? Now, I posted a video yesterday, and it was a hearing back in 2012, and like a proper official hearing, and you've got credible doctors, a neurological surgeon's got over 30 years. He's telling you that mercury, thimerosal, what is known as in vaccines, does create autism. And the guy who was interviewing the lady from the FDA, he's saying that, and it's not, they never tell you that it does, like categorically, that mercury does not cause autism. They won't ever admit it. So when I'm seeing stuff like that, that, hold on a minute, you've got all these, like, is it one in 37 now? Autism's on the rise. You've got all these heavy metals, all, like formaldehyde, all this stuff in vaccines, and it carries a risk. Well, I can now look at all the information and go, do you know what? I don't trust these people. I don't trust the people making vaccines. Because even that video that I shared, the guy was saying that the people that are making these decisions to prove this, so they've got investment, they've got shares and they're invested because they've got patents. So it's all corrupted. So why would I put my trust into that, into vaccines when it cannot be trusted? Why would I do that?
You have a duty of care, don't you, to your children? And yeah. You know, you kind of weigh up the pros and the cons of anything. And as a mother, then, if you say, well, I don't think really he should have the flu jab. First of all, he's a young lad, you know. Why would he need the flu jab? He might get the flu, so what? He'll fight it off. He'll spend a few days in bed. You'll give him a bit of chicken soup. He'll have loads of fluids and he will get over it and his immune system will be all the better for fighting it off. That's how it used to be anyway. I mean, we've got a very old family doctor and she would say that, you know, there's nothing better for children than to fight off bugs without medication because it makes them very robust into adulthood. It's almost like they've turned kind of common medical knowledge on its head, Cassie. They're telling us that the things we knew to be fact, you know, over the years, they're telling us now they're not facts. They're turning established knowledge kind of upside down. It's like the measles. You and I would have gotten the measles. We would have done. And our parents would have made sure that we got the measles, you know. Make sure he gets it, you know, before he gets too old. And we would have gotten it and it would have been unpleasant, but we would have fought it off. And it made us all the more robust.
There would be chances where there have been children that have had measles that have been severely affected by it. That's we can't like discredit
no,
that.
But millions to one in the odds. I mean, the odds are astronomical that if your child gets it, that the child will be, you know, blinded or very badly ill. I've actually calculated the odds and presented them on the programme. I don't have them to hand. But it's, you know, the odds of you getting measles and getting very sick are like 0.000 something percent. It's very, very rare. So why vaccinate the whole country? Why insist that every child is vaccinated and then given boosters and boosters and boosters? It makes no bloody sense because you've got more chance of falling out of a plane.
And what's wrong with the unvaccinated people? What's so wrong with the unvaccinated people? If your vaccines work, I've seen that meme. I get in a car and I've put my seatbelt on, but you're not wearing your seatbelt. And it's like, well, you haven't got your seatbelt on. That means my seatbelt isn't going to work.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's ludicrous. But when you start looking at, like, I'm debating with people that are pro on this, the people that are so, I cannot do it anymore because they're like, oh, where's the side effects? So I send them like a screen print of what I went and got from the pharmacist, the insert that clearly states on there neurological paralysis from the flu injection. Do they ever tell you that? Do they ever say, right, before I give you this, and that is under the medical ethics, they have got a duty of care to tell you when they administer that, by the way, it carries such and such and such a risk.
You're spot on, Cassie. You know, you're spot on. They also don't tell you that the flu vaccine very rarely works. And this is, if anybody wants to Google this, I'm not making it up because it suits my argument. They've admitted, go to the Telegraph, go to the Guardian. They admit that the vaccine is very ineffective. And the excuse they give is because the virus mutates so quickly. But anyway, and don't worry about it. Take some more vaccines.
It's on a different strain. It's like guesswork. Oh, it might work.
Might work.
It spreads as well. So there's people that don't want to vaccinate. Well, you're giving all your, like, shedding, your, like, all your germs and all the live virus, you're now shedding onto the people that don't want to vaccinate.
Crazy. Let me read a couple of tweets. Cathy Crowhurst is our guest. Lots of interest in this on Twitter, understandably. These are very big issues, the sexualization of children. and forced vaccines. Don't forget, the Health Secretary Matt Hancock is currently exploring all legal avenues because the government would wish to mandate certain vaccines for children in this country, the measles being the most obvious one. Mark Best tweets, Richie, my wife took my 17-year-old daughter to the GP a few years ago regarding a totally non-sexual problem. The GP asked if she wanted to go on the pill. My daughter wasn't sexually active at the time. That was absolutely outrageous. Dean Smith says that the sexual health lessons that Cassie has been talking about, Warwickshire, isn't up north at the moment. I don't think Yorkshire parents will be so passive. Charlotte Binns is listening in Burnley. How you doing, Charlotte? And she's tweeted a link to Mr. Hunt's Twitter account. This is Johnny Hunt, who is a sex education consultant and going off the rails, which you mentioned earlier on, training young people, and he puts his pronouns on there. How very woke of him. He and him are his pronouns. So I don't want anybody to be piling in on Johnny Hunt now. We're not saying that Johnny Hunt is the villain of the piece, but there is a link there to what he's been doing as well. Mad stuff. So what do you think of that then? Imagine we might be in a place in a year or so when the government says, tell you what, Cassie, tough cookies, we believe that everybody should be vaccinated if they go to school and your youngsters are going to have to get it. What would you do then? Again, I don't want to be putting you on the spot here. Just imagine it, hypothetical situation. It happens, it comes in. What would you do?
I would not be consenting to that. I would not. I tell you what, there was a thing that I found, and this is on the, let me find it for you, on the NHS website, because I would be going back and I'd want these people to take liability. If they want me to do that, then they need to take the liability for telling me that the what they're doing and what they're administrating is safe. It is safe. And are they going to be held liable for it? Where's the documentation? It was on the NHS website and it talks about consenting. Here it is. Consent to treatment. Now, this is based on the NHS website. So consent. Consent to treatment means a person must give permission before they receive any medical treatment. Now, under here, it says defining consent. Voluntary. The decision to either consent or not to consent to treatment must be made by a person and must not be influenced by pressure from medical staff, friends and family.
Yeah.
And informed, the person must be given all the information what the treatment involves, including the benefits and risks. Now, they don't tell you the risks, do they? And then the last bit, the principle of consent is the important part of medical ethics and the international human rights law. Well, how can you enforce a vaccine, which is medicine, that carries risks? How can you enforce that on someone?
Without accepting liability. There's a very important distinction to be made about the UK and the US. Cassie is quite rightly talking about the UK. In the United States, legislation was passed that exempts the manufacturers of vaccines from liability. Isn't that extraordinary? In the United States, they cannot be sued. It doesn't matter what the vaccine does. And I know this because I interviewed a lady in New York City whose baby died some years ago after receiving 13 vaccines in one day. Oh, and God. Died a couple. Yeah, Alyssa Nethery gave us an interview and nobody would talk to her. Ended up coming to this program, God love her. Nobody would speak to her. Couldn't get on US media. Eventually, they did pick it up. And she found that there's nothing she can do. Legislation prevents her from suing the manufacturers. But that is not the case in the UK. So you make an excellent point. If they want to mandate it, they must also accept that they will be liable in the event the child suffers some adverse health effects from the vaccine. But I don't imagine they'll be too quick to do that, Cassie. To agree, okay, you must have the vaccine, and we agree that if anything goes wrong, we'll compensate you. They won't do that.
Well, where else is there that they enforce something? It carries a risk. This is what really frustrates me, is that it's constantly touted. Repeat the lie, like keep repeating it, people then believe it. Is that they're not safe. They're not safe. When you look up the definition of safe, it means to not carry any harm, of like risk. Like, it's got a risk. It does harm. there are side effects to this medicine.
There are a couple of thousand. There are a couple of thousand girls in Ireland who received the Gardasil vaccine, the human papillomavirus vaccine. A couple of thousand, not just in Ireland, who suffered terribly debilitating illnesses having received that, and nobody will listen to them. Obviously, it wasn't safe for them. Cassie, Liz tweets that she had to sign a consent form and was warned about possible problems before she had her operation recently on her ankle. How can they sidestep that to force vaccines? Surely they've got to warn you of the risks and then get you to waive liability. To basically,
exactly. It's a good point. Like when I had my son, I had an epidural, and before I had the epidural, my husband had to read it out. I had to sign that. I had to agree to it before they administered it, because it does, epidurals do carry, there's a big risk to it. But at that moment in time, I was like, I really need an epidural. Yeah. So I went with that, but I had to consent. Anything that carries a risk, if I go and do like a bungee jump or like scuba diving, I have to sign a waiver. I have to go, these are the risks involved. Yep, okay, I agree with that. You're not liable, and I will sign. To consent. And I think the way they get around this is by fining people.
Yeah, like in Australia, they married the introduction of mandated vaccines with punishment, particularly for poorer people that were dependent on state benefits, didn't they, Cassie? So in Australia, they said, if you don't agree, we might penalise you by taking some money away from you, your benefits. That's something that I'm sure they look at here. I mean, he is exploring. The health secretary has asked the highest legal authorities in the country to tell him if it's okay for him to go ahead and mandate it. And what better way could they punish people than by saying to people, we'll stop your money? Do you know what? Crazy.
Or you won't be allowed into school.
Or you can't go to school.
Sorry, my child's got a right, is it not, to be educated. And now you're taking that away because I'm not. It frustrates the hell out of me.
Worse than being fined, of course. Again, and I don't want to worry people, I don't want to scare anybody, but you've got to know the possibilities. Worse again is that they come knocking around and they make little subtle suggestions, like maybe you're not a good parent.
Well, you've then got to talk to these people.
Yeah, yeah.
I would never, ever entertain it. Never entertain it.
Don't open the door.
I would not entertain it. That's why whenever I've got an issue and I can articulate and I can keep my calm and I can keep my composure, that's why I've been into the headmistress. She's a lovely lady. We've had a good conversation. I'm very vocal on these things. And I will go with loads of evidence to back up, like the video today. How can you tell me that these vaccines don't cause autism when mercury there's links that it causes autism?
Yeah.
It's neurological, and the FDA are not telling you that it doesn't cause autism.
The pro-vaccine people, I must give them a mention, maybe I don't mention them often enough, but they regularly come back against people like you and people like my other guests who talk about this, and they will say the stabilizing agents that we put in vaccines, they say that the levels of metals like mercury are so minute that they couldn't possibly that's what they say, right? They always come back with that. What do you say to that?
This is what frustrates me. Now, these people, the pro-vax people, I had a friend here yesterday. She's still vaccinated. She's got another friend that's like me, who's very against it. And then she's got me talking about it. Yet she hasn't really spent the time in it, but will still choose to vaccinate. Okay. And that's her prerogative. But the people that I've seen it when I've tried to debate these pro-vax people, they have not done any, they haven't done the research. You find they regurgitate the biased media. They go on the NHS website. NHS website, you can't find anything about side effects.
No, but you know what, Cassie? They've been conditioned to see people like yourself, mothers like yourself and others. They've been conditioned to see you as kind of tinfoil hat wearers. And that's why they don't do the research themselves, because they have first been programmed to think this woman is a bit much. She's a bit hysterical. She's a conspiracy theorist, that wonderful CIA term. That's what they say, right?
Educated. I've got a PhD, Richie. That's another one. Well, are you a scientist? How should I know?
Well, do you know what's very interesting about that, Cassie? That's a very good point you've raised there. Some of the most vocal critics of people like you and others are, you know, people who attend or work at universities like Oxford, like an Irish guy called David Robert Grimes. But it turns out that he's not a chemist, he's not a biologist, he's not a microbiologist, he's not a doctor, he's a physicist. So he's got sod all to do with, you know, chemistry, biology, vaccines, all that sort of stuff. He's a bloody physicist. You find that many of the people that are, you know, the biggest trolls, for want of a better word, they're not themselves anything remotely like an expert. They're not. They're bloody physicists like this guy. And I think to myself,
These are who I find frustrating. They're intellectuals. Who am I to know? Well, I've done countless thousands of hours. I can read. And that's my argument. It's like, I'm not looking at the fake news and conspiracy theories. No, I'm looking at, like, the video I posted last night. It's a proper hearing, an official hearing with credible people on there. I'm seeing countless testimonials from people that pro-vax parents, you know, the parents that vaccinated their kids who have now got vaccine-damaged kids. I'm listening to the whistleblowers coming out saying, I'm looking at a vaccine-damaged court that's paid out over £4 billion. I'm looking at an industry that it's got no liability. I'm looking at all the corruption. Like, why would I trust it?
How many times over the years was Merck and GlaxoSmithKline Beecham fined billions of dollars for putting medication in the marketplace that damaged people? We know this. For bribing doctors to prescribe medicines, and we're told to just believe these people when they say it's safe. Cassie, we're just about out of time. I'm going to say this, that issue of course is huge, but on the issue of introducing some of the things we discussed earlier to children, sexual practices, that's going to run that. And I'm sure in the very near future, I think we'll be back on this programme discussing that with you and others. It's massively serious that, and most parents haven't a Scooby-Doo that it's going on, because life is hard. Life is difficult. Most couples are working. They can't afford childcare. They're leaving their children with their grandparents and their aunts and uncles. They're too bloody stressed to even consider that this stuff is going on. But I mean, I wouldn't have known about it if I hadn't have been spying on, sneaking around your Facebook page, by the way. Well, I'm glad I did. You know, I dropped in to just see what you were talking about, because we hadn't spoken in a long time. Yeah. This is vitally important. I'll tell you what, I'll give you the final word, 30 seconds, and we'll wrap it up because we're approaching the end of the programme. Thanks for coming back on today, Cassie. Final word to you.
Oh, I don't know what to say. Well, actually, no, I do know what to say. I think the good thing that's come of this, the Warwickshire Council have taken that information down. They've now taken it up. Why? Because of people like myself and others that are raising their voices, and they're saying this is not right. So people do, they say they haven't got time, they've got to have the time. They've got to look into this stuff and not trust. It's the problem we've got. People trust. They trust the schools, they trust authority, they trust the government, they trust that they live in a world that people are looking out for them and their best interests, and it's not. But that takes a massive paradigm shift. You've got to have a massive paradigm shift to then start questioning things. But it is, I see that's positive, because they've buckled under the pressure to get rid of it. And that's what we've got to start doing. We've got to make more noise on it. Otherwise, we're just bending over and, you know, taking it.
Good to have you back on. Go to facebook.com. Look for Cassie Crowhurst. There's only one. You'll find it. I'll put a link on Twitter for anybody who needs it to find the exact page and the exact link. And the videos Cassie mentioned earlier on, they're on the timeline there. You can watch them there. Really important stuff. Good to get your perspective as a mother, Cassie, as much as anything else. Thanks for sharing your time with us this afternoon. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming back. I look forward to catching up with you again in the future.
Thank you, Richie.
Good to have you on. Cassie Crowhurst there, live on the line on the Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019. Yeah. It's interesting, a number of you, I hope you've not got children listening, but I'm reading from the Metro. A number of you said you didn't understand the terms, one of the terms, felching, one of the terms, and other stuff. This is not a joke, and I'm not prudish, and I'm certainly not some latter-day kind of Mary Whitehouse type figure. But no child in the world should be considering sexual practices like fisting and felching and stuff like that. And there's a much deeper thing going on here, as she hinted at earlier on, Cassie there. You know, this is not just bad policy. You'd love to write it off as bad policy, wouldn't you? You know, it's just a mistake. It's just a stupid idea. And too often when I do programs like this, because I've got listeners and they listen, but they don't go along with some of our conclusions. And they think, oh, Richie, you add two and two together and you make five. It's just some bad policy. This is not bad policy. This is an agenda to sexualise children. It is. Nobody can tell me any different. It's not because I'm stubborn, but I've looked at it from every angle. Hi to Sharon Gale, who's listening to this with great interest. How are you doing, Sharon? And to Katie Jackson. Hi, Katie. Nice to hear from you on Twitter there, who's been listening to my conversation with Katie Jackson. A lot of comments came in on that and on vaccines. Susan, how you doing, Susan? The NHS has changed, updated its harm bit on vaccines. They say, the NHS, there is no mercury in them anymore. But aluminium and so on still is in the vaccines. And that's linked to Alzheimer's, says Susan. It's in everything from shampoos to deodorants, cooking pans, baking foil. We are literally being drowned in aluminium. Yeah, that's right. I have nothing to add to that, Susan. Well said, good stuff. Hi to Joe Public. How you doing, Joe? Joe says his son was taken into care and died because of it. Jesus, Joe, I'm very sorry to hear that. I really am. I can't imagine what that must have been like for you. And I've interviewed and spoken with many people, including, of course, most famously Sharon Gale earlier on, and Luke Maguire, of course. Yeah, so I hear you. I'm going to close out the programme today. Thanks again to David Vance for coming on. And thanks to Cathy Crowhurst. David, very interesting. PayPal demonetizing, defunding, or attempting to, independently created independent news networks and independent content creators are being targeted by Facebook, by Google, by Twitter, and by PayPal. Yes, they are. There's no doubt about that. And it's shocking. And don't cheer when somebody that you don't like is being demonetized, because it doesn't make any sense, because it'll be you next. And if it's not you next, it'll be some channel that you like and that you value. Okay? Stand up for those you disagree with. That's what I say. And do that more often than standing up for people you do agree with. Going to close out the program with Metallica today. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Cassie. Thanks to David again. Back with you tomorrow. Maria Heller is among the guests on the Richie Allen Show tomorrow. Looking forward to catching up with Maria again. Really important. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Bye for now. See you tomorrow. Bye.